This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Stop thinking, let things happen,
and be the cheese.
Shortest distance between two points is a straight line. In the opposite direction, Danny.
When I was tumbling, I could notice that I was not going in a straight line.
Hear nothing, feel.
Be the cheese.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Be the cheese. You make Caddyshack references to a freshly graduated college student, and you know that their eyes glaze over. Right? You know. Like, she might have never heard, that was Abby Lampe from yesterday, she might have never heard of the movie Caddyshack.
Maybe.
It's there's a better chance than not that she has never heard of the movie Caddyshack.
Yeah, someone at her age, probably not.
Right. 22 years old, no chance. She like if I referenced the movie Animal House, mm-hmm. Forget it, he's rolling. Right? No chance. Like, very little chance. Even though all college-age students should have watched Animal House once.
Well, it's probably still a common thing in dorm rooms. The John Belushi, just college poster.
The shirt
that says
college.
College.
Right. Maybe.
That's probably still
but
around.
But that doesn't mean that
they know what it is.
That anybody knows what the movie is. The movie's 45 years old.
Golly, is it really?
Whatever. I mean, it came out. Well, Animal House had to come out in the 80s, right? The late 70s, early 80s.
Let's look it up.
I think it's probably early 80s for Animal House. And Caddyshack about the same time.
78.
78. Yeah, about the same time
Caddyshack.
For Caddyshack.
I think it was 77, I believe.
So, I mean, yeah. Well before these people were born.
Caddyshack was 80. I take that back.
Okay. I mean, that was the time where that iteration of SNL stars was just pumping out great movies. Mm-hmm. Unlike what we have from, never mind, I'm not going to editorialize that. Anyway, we've got a lot of things to do today. There's not breaking news, but there's fresh news with Liv. We're going to get to that a little bit later. There's nothing worth even bringing up other than Bryson DeChambeau has confirmed that he's going as well. Not this week, but the next event, which is later in the summer. It's next month, but we'll get to that in due time today. But we got a lot of football stuff to get to, and the firing of the Angels and former Rays manager Joe Maddon will get us going today. And we'll talk to our friend Julian Council at the bottom of the hour. Locked On Panthers podcast minicamp started today, mm-hmm. and it appears that the offense is way ahead of the defense. What?
Usually it's the opposite.
Wait. What? Yeah, we're going to talk to Julian about that. But let's get going. I was listening to Dennis put together clips today, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure. Did you use this in the open, the great philosopher Basho?
I didn't use that in the open, right?
You know, said a flute with no holes is not a flute.
It's not a flute.
And a donut with no holes is a Danish, which is, I mean, words to live by.
Be the cheese.
But the great philosopher Ray Davies once sang, "It's a mixed up, muddled up, shook up world." For my Lola. Yes, that was about his Lola. But Cam Newton, in a completely different realm, opened up on the Pivot podcast, which is hosted by, among others, ESPN's Ryan Clark, and talked about things that have gotten in his way, first with New England and then with Carolina. Here's what Cam had to say about what happened with the Patriots.
I was still learning the offense 7 to 8 weeks into the season. That was.
In what regards was it messed up?
Okay, I'm learning systems mentally. right? As a quarterback, it's not just can you catch. It's not just can you can disguise that. We all been around teams where it's like ready break. Hey, what I got?
Right.
As a quarterback, you have to look the part, act the part, and be the part, mm-hmm. right? So there was countless hours with Jed Fish. There was countless hours with Josh McDaniels. There was countless hours with so many different people trying to teach me certain things, and it was just brain overload. So it was times I'm going to the line, and I'm still thinking. I'm thinking about the enunciation of the play. I'm thinking about forgetting my motions. I'm thinking about my sight adjust. I'm thinking about certain things. So that's the f***ed up situation. Did I know it? Yes. To the degree that I needed to know it to in order to show the world that I'm still Cam Newton? No, right. I didn't. But I put myself in that situation.
All right, I don't know what enunciation is, but that's we'll move on. What happened in Carolina?
Now, Carolina, I put myself in another f***ed up situation. I was signed on Thursday. I played on Sunday. Yeah. At what point did you think you was going to be successful? That next week, I started. That's still up under 10 days of you being on a team.
Right.
And you're still trying to learn an offense. This is not a receiver. This is not a safety. This is not a left tackle.
Right.
This is a quarterback. So before I sit up here and allow the narrative to be made that Cam ain't got it no more, Cam is taking full responsibility and saying that Cam put himself in a fucked up situation, which then had a ricocheted effect to people thinking how you think, which I respect, because we all are entitled to our opinions.
Right.
I don't necessarily have to agree with it, nor should you or anybody else who watches this has to agree with it. But I'm saying I put myself in some fucked up situations thinking that, man, I'm Cam, bro. I'm booked.
All right, a couple of things. First of all, you go back to Cam's year with the Patriots, and I don't know how many people remember game two, which was, I believe, at Seattle. And the Patriots were right there to win the game. If Cam can run it over from like the 2-yard line in the final series, the Patriots upset Seattle in Seattle, I believe. I mean, that was just an incredible game. Cam Newton looked like the old Cam Newton in that game. He was slinging it around. He looked great. Then COVID hit. And Cam never really recovered from that. He was not the same player after he had the bout with COVID. I think he missed two games.
Sounds right, or at least one.
Right, but he was not the same player when he came back. And what ultimately happened was the Patriots became just a very much a run-heavy team, using Cam more in the run game than they were really in the passing game. And that's just what they evolved into. You go back and you look at what happened in game two, that game against the against the Seahawks, it was awesome. You were like, whoa, this is the Cam that we saw. I'm not saying that there weren't, you know, there wasn't a steep learning curve in terms of learning the offense, but one like Cam was just like showed up on opening day. Like, I think this is in a way, and the same thing that happened with the Panthers. Yeah, there was that the bigger, was not knowing the offense, Dennis, you think the bigger issue in Carolina?
No.
What do you think the biggest issue was with Carolina?
Coaching.
Well, yes. But here's my point, and I talked about this during the season. You know what became obvious to all watching? Cam no longer had the arm strength to carry anything out.
Just physically,
he couldn't do it. Now, every once in a while, it looked right. The ball came out of his hand looking right with some zip on it. But that was not repeatable over any length of time. He is a max effort thrower now. Nothing looks comfortable. Everything is forced. He has to gear up to get the ball out to the sideline. He can't get the ball deep down the field anymore. Like, I want Cam to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a thing anymore. It's in a way, it's sad. Because before the injuries, and we're talking about the shoulder injuries to Cam. We're talking about the shoulder injury that took him out, was it in 16? Was that 16, right?
I want to say it was 2018.
Well, that was the second one. The first one that took him out at the end of 16, I believe, and he missed the beginning of training camp in 17, right? Wasn't the same. But in 2018, they started the season, and he looked like the old Cam, where, I mean, the ball looked great coming out of his hand. They were 6-2 going to that Thursday night in Pittsburgh, and they looked, I mean, he looked like an MVP-type candidate. And then they got lit up that Thursday night by the Steelers. He got hurt again. It's not been the same. I mean, he just can't throw. I don't think it's about recognizing a defense. Mm-hmm. I respect the hell out of Cam Newton and what he did in his career. What he's saying there, I think we're making excuses. No offense. I mean, sorry. I think we're making excuses. I just think physically he can't throw anymore. We'll see. I mean, it ain't like anybody's brought him in, right? I think it's over.
Yeah.
I think maybe somebody will kick the tires on him and bring him to training camp. I just don't think he can throw. And if you can't throw, it's really hard to be a quarterback in the NFL. Adam Gold here from my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. All right, Coach, simple. When do we start tax planning in retirement?
We should start as soon as possible, because here's one thing, Adam. Taxes are not going away.
Right.
And so the game here is, we know the rules. A lot of people want to ignore the rules or act like they don't are familiar with them, but the IRS knows the rules. And so when we get to retirement, they're going to reach in and start taking some of their money out of your accounts. So the secret here is to put a force field around as much as possible by strategically moving some of our money to Roth IRA or some of the other vehicles that aren't taxed, like special life insurance policies. You can borrow against your money there and never have to pay tax on your money that you build up inside your cash value. So there are a lot of strategies here. The one strategy that does not work is ignoring it. So let's make sure to not ignore it. The next 10 people will do for you your very own tax and retirement plan that will help you minimize taxation all the way through retirement.
800-661-7383. All you got is call, or you can text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter. All right, moving to another football thing. Let's get to this one quickly before Elliot Johnson joins us to talk about his former manager. According to a report by Jenny Vrentas in the New York Times, over a 17-month span, Deshaun Watson booked massage sessions with 66 different therapists. Fall of 19 through spring of 21. This whole thing hit in the spring of 21.
Yeah.
Right? That's one per week if you're keeping track of such matters. And there were, based on everything we've read, there are some therapists that he contacted more than once. So 66 different. We're probably talking about something closer to two per week. But regardless, we get lost in the weeds on this. But you know what it really means? Think about this. 22 women on the civil suit right now, right? 22 different women on the civil suit, on this massive civil suit. Two others have come forward in the last week or so and filed their own lawsuits against Kaepernick. Against Deshaun Watson. My fault. So that means there are, and I'll use at least, because who knows, 42 more potential cases. If Jenny Vrenta's reporting is accurate, and she is a star reporter, at least 42 more. Maybe this is why the NFL is kind of stuck in molasses when it comes to announcing whatever discipline they are planning for Deshaun Watson. Here's Courtney Cronin, who's a host on ESPN Radio and also covers the Bears. Here's what her thoughts are regarding the Browns and Watson.
All the stuff now, do you think that the Cleveland Browns are probably looking back on themselves saying, yeah, we wish we would have actually done the real due diligence and talked to some of the women that were filing these civil lawsuits against Deshaun Watson before giving him that contract? Because here's the thing. They could get out of this if they want to. They really could. I think it would take a lot more than this, sadly, for the Cleveland Browns to pull the plug on the Deshaun Watson experiment before it even gets started, but there are two more lawsuits that have been filed. Like, what more is it going to take?
I have a question. The Browns made this trade with the Texans, and they guaranteed Deshaun Watson $230 million, mm-hmm. knowing that there were 22 women who filed a civil lawsuit, knowing this. So even if they did zero other background checking information seeking on this, they did no investigation. They simply read the news. How much worse really is 66 than 22? Seriously, how much worse is that? Like, 22 not bad enough? Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Like, no offense to Courtney Cronin, but 22 should have been a deterrent.
Yeah.
Right? 66, not a deterrent. If 22 isn't a deterrent, the number could be 660,000. It's not a deterrent if 22 isn't a deterrent. The Cleveland Browns made a determination that Deshaun Watson as a quarterback was so good that they did not care as long as he wasn't going to jail, that he's going to be their quarterback. So much so that they gave him the greatest contract in the history of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
He doesn't deserve that as a player. They had to do this to get him because he didn't want to go there.
And they openly acknowledged the fact that, you know what, the league's probably going to suspend him.
Yes.
So we're only going to pay him $1 million this year.
Oh, they set it up. Really not going to lose money.
Exactly. They acknowledge the fact that, you know what, we see it. Doesn't matter.
Like, whatever, right? It's professional sports. I think we are learning more every single day that professional sports is about one thing and one thing only, and that is winning.
Mm-hmm.
Morality? Screw morality. Nobody gives a damn about morality. How's my team doing? That's all they care about.
Bottom line.
Right? Right. We're seeing this in golf. We know about it in the NFL. We see about it in all sports. Nobody gives a damn. Can we win? That's all they care about. I'm not even saying that that's wrong about professional sports. Okay, I am not criticizing it, but Courtney Cronin, if 22 didn't give the Browns pause, 66 ain't either. And that is the simplest way to put it.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
So Joe Maddon was fired, yesterday, by the Los Angeles Angels, 2 days ago. As manager of the Los Angeles Angels. And I thought, I know somebody that's played for Joe Maddon, spent some time with the Tampa Bay Rays, and then, in his only season with the Kansas City Royals, Elliot Johnson went 10 for 27 with 5 RBI, 7 runs scored, 2 homers, a double, a triple, and 2 stolen bases against the Rays. So, Elliot Johnson, you were just trying to get back at your old skipper.
Without a doubt, yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, if they package you up in a deal but don't let you know until you're the last one to know, I mean, you kind of want to let them know that you don't appreciate that and let your play kind of speak for itself, and I think I did that.
You
it was
absolutely
a lot of fun, by the way, but you know, my dad was there, and he was on Father's Day, of all things, Adam, for the team. They brought me down and interviewed us in St. Pete against the Rays because I was having a great series against those guys. So there were some really good memories about that entire trip.
Like I don't want to like overstate this, but you had 29 hits with the Royals. 10 of them came against the Rays. Both of your home runs that season, 4 of your 5 extra base hits. You were really mad at Joe.
Well, I mean, I knew those guys inside and out. I knew how they were going to attack me. I mean, you know, it was a chess match, and obviously I won the large market share of those opportunities, and, you know, I let them know. But, you know, I mean, not to say that I didn't enjoy my time with Joe or the Rays. It's just, you know, I just didn't appreciate the way the front office treated me in that trade.
Right, Joe, and I'm assuming Joe had very little to do with that, but I am curious your thoughts. It almost seems to me that they were waiting for the time to do this. Whether or not it was what happened with Madden leaking out the news about what they wanted to do as an organization with Mike Trout before the season, which ultimately they have decided not to do. They haven't made the playoffs under Joe Madden, and this 12-game losing streak, I don't know if they lost last night or not, but this long stretch that they're on has sort of almost killed any opportunity for them. What are your thoughts on what the Angels have done and Madden as a manager?
Well, Joe's a phenomenal manager. So this is kind of one of those power struggles that you see with the new GM, you know, all those different things that are going on with that. Ultimately, they just have bad ownership in Anaheim or, you know, Los Angeles, wherever you want to call them now. But ultimately, Moreno just needs to clean up his act and stop meddling so much is ultimately you know, you as a Mets fan, Adam, can appreciate this. Look what Steve Cohen has done for the Mets.
Yes.
For goodness sake. So, you know, every time that Moreno meddles, things don't go particularly well. I'll give him credit for Shohei Ohtani, of course. But, you know, losing underneath Joe Madden, they haven't been to the playoffs long before Joe Madden got
right
there. So to assume that Joe is somehow the problem, he's not. The root of the problem is more so ownership, front office, and the fact that they cannot get any pitching in that organization. They have the best player of our generation, and they're just wasting his prime years every single year by never getting enough supporting cast, especially on the defense or the pitching side of the ball, to be able to get him into the playoffs and at least find a way to even, you know, get a wild card. They can't even do that, Adam. So it's a lot more top to bottom than it is bottom up.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. They have spent bad money, and they have tried to act in many ways. I'm not even saying like the Mets, because the Mets have acted in a cheap way before Steve Cohen got there. The Wilpons were trying to do they were trying to replenish their own financial situation as a result of the Bernie Madoff fallout, as opposed to putting the money back into the team and letting that, you know, that revenue grow, which would have benefited them in the long run, but they were looking at it in a more selfish way. I think they have the Angels have just not figured out how to spend good money, and they have they've not taken advantage of Mike Trout, and I know Trout has gotten a bunch of flack from Major League Baseball for not being marketable. Like, make the damn playoffs. That's how we know you're marketable. By the way, they did lose to the Red Sox again last night, so I guess it's 13 in a row now for the Angels. What was good about play? And by the way, real quick about Madden, he's part of the success story of Shohei Ohtani, because baseball circles wouldn't have allowed this to happen, wouldn't have allowed a two-way player. Madden made it possible. What was it about Madden that, you know, he's sort of a progressive guy?
Well, yeah, he's creative. I think he's open-minded. I think he's willing to listen. You know, one of his complaints, if you read the article in The Atlantic, was talking about how they've really just over-exaggerated the analytics. Instead, what the analytic guys just don't understand is sometimes it's best to just let them be the best athlete they can be and not to cram their brain with too many things that take away from their athleticism by being free-minded. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, Joe's more where the rubber meets the road on how to actually put it into play, whereas a lot of times the analytics guys just don't understand it because they didn't play. And it doesn't matter how much information you can pump into some guys. Some guys do better with less information than more. So you just have to be able to understand all that. But very going back to the Mets, very savvy on your part to understand that the Wilpons were trying to recoup their losses from the Madoffs with the baseball team. And instead of running it in a fashion where they were trying to win, they were running it in a fashion to be, I guess, productive from a business standpoint monetarily and revenue-wise rather than a winning organization.
Yeah, look, I've spent way too much time thinking about why, like, the Mets and the Cubs, and I'm not a proponent of any sort of salary cap, and I think the luxury tax is as prohibitive as I would ever allow in a league that I supported. But there's really no reason why a team with the resources of the Mets or the Cubs, who are obviously an embarrassment, or the Angels, or teams with especially local television deals. And when you own a network like the Mets and SNY, which does very well, there's just no excuse for not being at least good.
Think about it this way. If you're the Angels, the smartest thing that they could probably do, and they're going to get roasted for it regardless, is to move Trout while he still has some really productive years, replenish your farm system, get some guys in there that can actually help you win in the future, because they've proven they can't win with him. So, I mean, at this point, I understand that, you know, you need him to sell tickets, but if you're trying to win, they're going to have to move him and get, you know, a king's ransom for him in return. But I don't even know if they're savvy enough. I know they've considered it, but I don't know if they're savvy enough to realize that that really is their only move at this point, because they cannot, will not, they don't have the ability to put anything around him, and it doesn't look like it's coming in any short term either.
Yeah, and that is the double-edged sword for an organization like the Angels. There's not enough coming up through the system to supplement and win around him. So what do? Do you just lose with arguably the best player in the game on your team? Or do you try to get better and ultimately have to move him? Every team has been faced with that situation. The Mets, in a way, back in the day, were faced with this with Tom Seaver, which might not have been the best thing they ever did. And they didn't really replenish anything, as it turns out. But that's another story altogether. Elliot Johnson, watch your Royals versus Rays highlights.
I have plenty, Adam, I promise you.
All right, man. I'll talk to you very soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
Like, seriously, his time with the Royals, which was he was traded to the Braves, I think it was after the first trade deadline. But his time with the Royals was not all that great. He had, like, 29 hits in 73 games. But 10 of them came in 6 games against Tampa. It was just awesome.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.